And how we doing, Brother Steve? Have we got the units turned on up here?
Let's look and see. That always makes a difference. All right.
It should be a little different now. How many of you are thankful for Brother Steve filling in for Brother Ted, who has gone on vacation? Now, see, Brother Ted doesn't miss very many Sundays, and so hardly ever anybody else even gets in that box back there. And he's got everything worked out and down to a system, and it just, he goes through everything. And so when somebody has to cover all the bases, there's just a lot of stuff on Sunday morning. Brother Ted comes in and gets things open and going and doing. And so it's hard to remember it all, isn't it, Steve? All right. Give Steve a hand back there. He's doing a great job. We appreciate Mike in the video booth. Pretty soon he's going to be getting a video link from the guys who are building our new website, and then he will be able to load right after Sunday morning services. He'll be able to load these sermons right onto our website, and they'll be up fresh every week. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting very, very close. And indeed, we have just this past week loaded up the last 6 weeks. There are two of those that are video, and all six of them in audio format. And so you can enjoy those if you'd like, or if you've missed something. But indeed, what we're excited about is if you're sick, or you're away on vacation, or you have to miss a service, you indeed can pick right up and catch those things and be a part of the service back home. So we're excited about that and the opportunity that presents to us. If you have your Bibles this morning, I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 50. Genesis chapter 50. I want to read to you verses 19 and 20. I want to talk to you this morning and share with you a message that I've entitled The Right Perspective. The Right Perspective. Terrible trials and tough times. Now, how many of you this morning would say that in the last 3 or 4 years, you have experienced maybe some of the most challenging times in your life? I mean, have you gone through any of those kind of things? The economy's been difficult. It's affected many people in many ways. Been a lot of our church families that have been facing health issues. I've got to tell you right now, I can go back immediately to the year 2009, and I'd like to just get rid of that whole thing. That was a bad year. Now, it wasn't that God didn't bring blessing in that year as well. I'm thankful for everything that God did. But if I had to repeat the circumstances of 2009, let me tell you, I would never choose to do that ever again for all the things that we endured in that particular year. I am thankful for God's grace and mercy as He led us through and the things that He taught us. But, you know, it happens at different times for different folks. And that's one of the great things about the Christian community is the devil can't get us all at once. He may oppress a few people for a little bit, but there's some other folks on the mountaintop, and if you get a hold of the rope, they'll pull you up. And that's the great thing about the Christian community. And knowing that God is there and will help us through is a great faith statement that all of us need to take advantage of. I read to you Genesis chapter 50, and then you'll understand the significance of what I'm about to read to you when we back up a few chapters and talk about the whole story. But this is text this morning, Genesis chapter 50. Verses 19 and 20. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." Now, what I want to say to you this morning, I probably could just say right here in the sentence and we could just go home, but I'm going to give you the whole deal before we go, okay? But that is this. We just need to have the right perspective. We need to understand that whatever happens and whatever comes in life, that God can indeed make us better for having gone through it, okay? And with that said, I want to use Joseph this morning as our focus, and I'm not going to read a lot of scripture at this point because you don't want me to read the text, because it goes from Genesis chapter 37 through chapter 50, and you don't want me to read all that to you this morning. So let me tell you just very quickly the story of Joseph from the biblical presentation in those chapters. And that is this. If you remember, Joseph was the younger of several brothers. He was a favorite son. Now, I don't understand some of these things. I know that God printed the Bible so that we would see examples from that. But it pretty much says that Joseph's father liked him better. He made him a coat of many colors. and he made him to be a special young man. Now, if you would ask, I'm the baby of my family. I'm the youngest of five. And if you would ask the four older siblings, they would tell you that I got preferential treatment. They are lying. They don't mean to. They're good people. But that is not true, even though they say it. But, you know, there are people who think that, and the truth of the matter is, there are some people out there who do treat their children differently. Now, I believe that my parents were very fair, and I think they treated us all the same, but my older sister, she didn't think that. At any rate, I guess early on, you would ask my oldest. We have four children at our house, and Cody, of course, is my oldest, and I've heard conversations between he and my youngest, Hannah, about preferential treatment and getting privilege sooner and faster and more and all that kind of stuff. I think at this stage of the game, I'm just so old and tired, I don't have it in me anymore to keep up with all that. So at any rate, Cody wore me out to start out with, so now he's paying due dividends, I guess. But at any rate, the truth of the matter is we should treat all of our children equally. And I think we mean to love all of our children the same. But the truth is that in this Bible story, it says Joseph was a favorite son. And as a result, he got preferential treatment, and that was bad enough as it was. But then he had a dream, and then another dream. And basically in these dreams, he was more than willing to share them with his older brothers, whom he basically said, one of these days, you're going to bow down to me. Well, that sounds good when you're the little younger brother, but it doesn't go real well with the older guys, and they were bigger and they were older. And so indeed, it kind of frustrated them a little bit to the point that they said, there's a cistern over there, throw him in. And so they took him and they threw him in the cistern, and they decided, you know, what are we going to do with him? Matter of fact, one of them, the oldest brother, was trying to defend a little bit, because there was one of them that wanted to kill him, you know. And I remember a few times when my brother Eddie would say to me, I'm going to kill you, you know. And he didn't really mean that, but he probably felt that right at the moment. And you've heard that at different points and places on the playgrounds and around, you know. And the truth of the matter is that even adult people say that kind of stuff. And indeed, we read the newspaper the next morning and some of them have pulled it off. Sad state of affairs that we live in. That's what sin does to people. At any rate, Joseph is in the cistern. His brothers decide, well, we can't kill him. So they take him and they sell him to a group of people that are coming by. And they sell him out to be a slave. They soak his coat of many colors in wild animal blood. And they take it to their father and they say, oh, Dad, Joseph got killed by a wild animal. And so Joseph's father grieves quite heavily, and indeed Joseph is hauled off in slavery, and he's bought by a guy named Potiphar, who indeed trusts him, and he becomes in charge of Potiphar's house. Potiphar's wife thinks that Potiphar is on too many business trips, and so she gets a little frustrated, and she decides that Joseph is a pretty handsome-looking guy, and she wants to get into an extramarital situation, and Joseph's saying, hey, I don't want any part of that, and he's turning tail and running, which is what we ought to do when we get in sin. Sometimes it doesn't pay to stop and try to fight or out-talk sin. You just need to turn tail and run. Did you hear that? That's free. That's not really a part of the sermon. I'm just going to throw that in there so that you'll get it. Sometime when sin presents itself, turn tail and run. Don't matter what you look like. You know, it's not about what the... Just go. Get out. And that'll be a better thing. Anyway, so he did that, but she decided she would take his cloak. And of course, now she's in a situation where she's kind of been chasing after him for a while. What's she going to tell her husband? She's going to look pretty bad. She says, oh, by the way, while you were gone, I got bored, and so I took off after the servant guy. Not really the kind of thing you want to tell your husband when he's come home from a long business trip. And so as a result of that, he comes home and she says to him, look here, I have the cloak of this Hebrew here because he tried to come on to me. And Potiphar, being the calm, cool, and collected person that he was, went into a rage, and without even finding out what really happened, he took Joseph and said, traitor, and threw him into prison. And Joseph was there in prison. And while he was in prison, he interpreted dreams for a couple of guys, a cupbearer and a baker. And they said, we're going to remember you. And one of them didn't remember very long because the interpretation of his dream was that he was going to be beheaded, and he was. And the other guy then went into serve the king. But he forgot about Joseph until a couple years later when the king had a dream and nobody could interpret it. And he said, oh, yeah, by the way, I remember this guy I was in prison with, and he interprets dreams. And so, indeed, Joseph interpreted the dream, made the Pharaoh happy, and so now he becomes second in command in Egypt, and he invites his brothers in the time of famine to come and be a part of what's going on there. And they came seeking some help. He planted some silver in their bags so that he would have a little leverage, and he got the younger brother, whom he had never seen. He'd never met the youngest of the young. Got him to come and stay. And it all worked out, and he brought his dad and all of his brothers, and he brought them into Egypt and was able to take care of them, and they all lived happily ever after. That's the truth. All the way through chapter 50. But here's the deal. We read that, and when we read that, we're awfully bad to read things in the Bible and to get through all of that, and all we ever remember is the end. And so we read the story of Joseph and say, oh, Joseph ended up being in charge of Egypt. What a great guy he was. And he died, and they carried his bones out when they went on the Exodus. So he was a great guy. But we forget the journey from the cistern to the palace. And it just kind of dawned on me this week as I was thinking about this story of Joseph, and I've preached this story before, but it just really began to kind of soak into me. And I'm not sure, I'm thinking maybe my wife has been listening to Andy Stanley tapes that they've been using in her class, and we've been listening to, and so on Sunday mornings I hear that, Saturday night I hear it part of the time. And so he has a very good way of delivering things, and so I begin to think about some things kind of, and I'm getting maybe a little bit of that mindset, but I thought, you know, there are a lot of things in the story of Joseph that aren't just stuff that happened a long time ago. For instance, think about this. Let's look at the present parallels to what happened in Joseph's life all those many years ago and what's going on in our society today. And so if we went back to chapter 37 and we went to verse 4, it would read this way. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. So now we have what we would know today in psychological community as sibling rivalry. Okay? There's a seed that's been sowed there, and now there's angst and anxiety and animosity that, you see how I got three A words all in there at one time? How they just didn't like each other. Now, Joseph kind of liked them because he thought they were all going to bow down to him, so he thought that was okay. But they didn't much care for him. And all this kind of fell on Dad, because he didn't really handle things correctly. So you've got sibling rival. Well, going down to verse 11 of that same chapter, his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. How many times have you opened up a newspaper and read a story about something horrible that happened to somebody because somebody was jealous? How many times have you had your friends speak to you and say, I'm going through this terrible trauma because my spouse is jealous? Or I'm having this difficulty in our family. How many times have you seen it when somebody passes away that everybody loves, and you have a family that's always been a great family, they've always been intact, and have had a great time together, but parents die, and then people start wanting stuff? And how's it going to get divided? And all of a sudden, you got people that are really split up that have always been loving and together? I think that's sad. But when people are under emotional trauma, they don't think well. And they say and do things that they wouldn't normally do. Jealousy can really mess people up. So you got sibling rivalry, you got jealousy. Now 37:18 comes along and we read, but they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Now you have a conspiracy. These guys have come together and they've teamed up on little brother, and they're so aggravated, their jealousy has so overwhelmed them, that now they've turned to conspiracy. This is premeditated. Now, we know there's a lot of accidents out there, manslaughter type things, and involuntary and all that kind of stuff, but this is premeditated murder we're talking. Now, these guys were pretty worked up. So here's Joseph. He's the victim of sibling rivalry, which kind of was started by his dad. He's a victim of jealousy, which kind of came about because of the coat of many colors. And it was a little bit of his own arrogance because he was kind of telling these stories about how his brothers were going to bow down to him out of these dreams, which indeed, actually, were going to be true. So you know, maybe this is kind of like almost a dream or vision from the Lord. He didn't totally understand that, but he said, hey, this is what I dreamed. This is what's going to happen. And indeed, that was the truth. That was the truth. They didn't know it at the time. Then we go from conspiracy to the 28th verse of that chapter, and it reads like this. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. They had thrown him into the cistern. So now we've got an issue of domestic violence in verse 24. I'm sorry, I bypassed one here. They took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. And of course, he was there and alone. So we've got domestic violence going on. And that can go into a whole myriad of circumstances and situations. But here we've got the sibling rivalry going into endangerment. Then there's 37:28, which he sold out of the cistern, which, how many of you have been reading some articles lately about what they call human trafficking? It's becoming a major problem in our own country. It's a horrible problem in third world countries. People are sold into all kinds of slavery. It's human trafficking. That's what this was. This was a human trafficking problem. His brothers sold him into slavery. There wasn't any just cause for it. He didn't deserve it. Yeah, he was a little arrogant and a little irritating. But he didn't deserve to be sold into slavery. He didn't deserve to be killed. He didn't deserve to be... Well, he might have deserved being thrown in the cistern just for a little bit if they were going to pull him back out and take him home. When I was growing up, I used to work with the Holmes boys. Now, L.V. Holmes was my first Nazarene pastor. His sons were hard workers. He was bivocational on a dairy farm, and they used to truck hay out of Kansas. And Wayne Holmes, who goes to Springfield Community, was his son, was my hay crew boss, and I worked on a hay crew. And their younger brother, Jody, who at that point in time was about 10 years old, drove our hay truck. Those Holmes boys could all drive trucks by the time they were about 6 months old. Well, maybe not quite that young, but Jody was 10, and it was a big GMC truck with a flatbed on it, and we'd haul 125 bales on it, and it had one of those big steering wheels. Didn't really have power steering. Power steering was whatever power you put into it. Jody would get a hold of the top of the steering wheel and swing down to clutch the truck, and he would disappear. But he could do that on a hillside with the first stack of 25 bales straight up at the front of the rack and never drop a bale. But he was 10 years old. And when we got in the hay barn stacking this stuff, he was in the way all the time. And so we got into this one hay barn where this guy owned a huge farm. We were hauling like 24,000 bales over the course of a couple, 3 weeks. And somebody had one of these 60 bale, they used to make this thing that would haul 60 bales and it would tilt bed and you would just stack the bales in the barn. And farmers thought that was going to be a cool deal that they wouldn't have to pay for having their hay hauled. It's just that if you couldn't back one up, you couldn't stack very good. And so we went into a barn where they had started stacking with one of those. And so there were these holes, kind of, and we had to work around them until we could get everything tightened up. And Jody just got irritating one day. And so it just so happened that where they had backed about four of those 60-bale stacks in, there was kind of a hole. And we just kind of bumped Jody, and he kind of went down in the hole. We left him there until we got the 125 bales unloaded, and then we pulled him out. See, now, if Joseph's brothers would have done that, it wouldn't have been so bad. But they threw him in the cistern, meaning to leave him there. They were going to walk away and leave him, and then they got the option of selling him into slavery. I mean, he was having a bad day. And it got worse in a hurry because he was then sold to leave everything he knew and was familiar to him and go into a place and have no idea what was to come. Yet he found favor in Potiphar's house, until he was involved in an attempt at seduction. Advertisers try to seduce us all the time. And there are people out there that will seduce you into all kinds of situations if you let them. There are people out there who just don't think well. and don't care about anything other than themselves. And they will seduce you. There'll be temptation. There'll be opportunities to do things you shouldn't do. There'll be actually people encouraging you to do so. And that's what happened in chapter 39 when we jump over and find him at Potiphar's house. In chapter 39 and verse 7, now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Now that's pretty aggressive behavior for that culture. I'm thinking there wasn't a whole lot of interpretation left there. I'm pretty sure he knew exactly what she meant. And I'm pretty sure she knew exactly what she meant. So there's seduction. Well, then she knew when he wouldn't give in to her, she was in trouble with the boss, her husband. And so then it turned into worse than that. In 39 verses 14 and 15, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. And when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." And we know that's not the truth. That's not the way it went down. But that's what she told her husband when he came back. And in verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him in prison. The place where the king's prisoners were confined. Seduced, falsely accused, lost his job, and put in prison. Now, how many of you have had a 2 or 3 year period like that? Where you go from being thrown in a cistern to being thrown into prison. And while he was in prison, these guys made promises and they forgot. Chapter 39, verse 23. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Sibling rivalry, jealousy, conspiracy, domestic violence, human trafficking and betrayal, slavery, seduction, false accusation, job loss, imprisonment, and forgotten and broken promises. Now, how's your year going? It's all about perspective. I can't remember exactly how it goes, and it just now came to my mind, so I don't have it with me. Some of you have read. How many of you have ever read or heard the poem, "The World Is Mine"? You may not remember it. It goes, one of the lines goes something like this, and I don't remember exact wording, but it was bad when I had no shoes until I saw a man with no feet. And then there are several verses that are like that. And every situation is a bad situation, but every situation that was viewed then was something worse. And the truth of the matter is, no matter how bad it gets, somebody somewhere is worse off. And so, as we think about the story of Joseph, and as we see all of the things, and I could have gone into all kinds of statistics and read you newspaper articles, I mean, the bottom line is you understand all of these things are going on present day in huge magnitude. And some of you have experienced some of these situations in your own lives. The point is, okay, agreed. Joseph had a bad year and we've had some bad times. But how are we supposed to look at that? This is the point we want to come to. We want to find the perfect perspective. We want to see things from God's point of view. And I refer you back to Genesis chapter 45, for the story goes, When Joseph called his brothers in, because they came and they wanted some grain because there was famine, and so he called them in, and he knew they were his brothers, but they didn't know he was Joseph. And so he set this whole thing up to get Benjamin, his youngest brother, who he did not know, to come. And so he kind of tricked them a little bit because he was in a position where he could, and it was kind of unfair. But he did it, and 2 or 3 times you find as he's hearing about his father for the first time in years, and as he's hearing about this new brother, and as he's seeing the brothers that he loves because they're his family, two different times he bursts in. He gets teary eyed, and he has to leave the room. If you read the story, he leaves the room and he composes himself, and then he comes back in to deal with them again. And finally, the third time, He is overwhelmed in their presence, and he just bursts out bawling. And he says, "You're my brothers. I'm Joseph." And they're scared out of their wits. Because now here he is in a position of prominence and importance, and they think, paybacks. You know, they're scared. Because this guy's in a position, he can have their lives. And they know, probably, if all things were even, that's what they were thinking. That's what they intended for him, so, you know, turnabout's fair play. But in chapter 45, when all this is happening and going down, we find in 45, beginning at verse 5, that Joseph gets, he's got a handle on things. And this is what he says. "And now, do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God." Now, do you understand what's going on here? He's not mad at them. He's not mad at God either. What he's saying is, as a man who knows the one true God, and having looked back on this now, it's a good thing that I'm here. Because if I was not here, I could not help you. If I was still one of your brothers, we would still be over there in our homeland and we'd all be dying of starvation. And it wouldn't be a thing I could do about it. But while you thought you were trying to get ahead of me, you actually were launching me into God's plan. And I am now here in Egypt, second in command under Pharaoh, and I can have pretty much anything I want, and I want you and Daddy to come here and live, and I'm going to take care of you. If you hadn't sold me, if you hadn't got mad at me, we wouldn't be here. And so what I want to say to you is, how many of you here today can take some of the ugly, nasty stuff in your life and say, rather than being bitter about this, and rather than being unforgiving and holding grudges, and rather than just being mad, because the only person you're hurting is you. How many of you could come to a place this morning to say, that's pretty ugly stuff, and I don't think that's the way God would have done it if he'd been able to do his choice first. God didn't choose for me to be damaged. But indeed, God can take the damage and make good out of it. I read a story one time, and I wish I could remember exactly where the city was at, but there's a city, I think it's in Wisconsin somewhere, where they took a major landfill that was nothing but a rotting, stinking pile of trash. And they reworked it, and they put some chemicals on it, and they brought some dirt in, and they planted grass. And now, that old landfill, which was a rotting, stinking place, is a beautiful, green city park. But underneath it is all that trash. How many of us this morning would be willing to let God plant some new stuff over the trash? How many of us would be willing to let the old stuff be buried and let something new grow? Something that would be beautiful and productive and helpful to other people. And how many of us would be willing to take all of the difficulties that we've gone through and say, God, make me a better person because of the experiences that I have, and allow me to help somebody else? I know that in our lives there are hurts. There are people who have wronged us. Some of them never apologized. Some of them never said they were sorry. And some of them maybe weren't. Some people, because of sin in their own life and their own lack of relationship with God, are so self-centered that they do stuff intentionally because all they can think about is themselves. But you know what? We're here this morning in God's house. And I believe that we're here on purpose. And I believe that we're here on purpose because we want God to be involved in our lives. And so why hang on to the junk and act like the world when we could be in deliverance this morning? We could be in freedom. We could change our perspective and we could say, I forgive to everybody involved in our life, whether they ever asked for it or not. And we could say, Lord, how can you help me take that pain and turn that into something that will let me help somebody else? You know, there are people who are counselors at domestic violence centers and in drug rehabs and in a lot of situations because they've been there and done that and made those mistakes, and God has brought them out as an overcomer. And as a result of that, they give hope to people that are still down. What if that was us? What if we would just get past and get over some of the stuff that we just want to hang on to because it gives us a sense of, I have a right to feel this way. Well, what if you were to understand you don't have a right to feel that way? That as a Christian, you need to see things through God's eyes and the way God sees them. And what would happen in our world? What would happen in your realm of influence if you would be Jesus to everybody you know? What would happen to your realm of influence if you would see things the way God sees them? Is it true that when you became a Christian that you were a dirty, rotten sinner? We all were. Every one of us. But did that stop God from sending Jesus? Were you self-centered and obnoxious and all those kinds of things when you were born into this life, but didn't Jesus' blood still apply to you if you received it by faith? What if Jesus would have said, Dad, that's a great plan, I just don't want to do it. They're not going to appreciate it. Some of them aren't even going to accept it. So I don't think I want to do it. Thanks for thinking of me, but no thanks. But he didn't do that. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Okay? Then what's the Christian thing to do? The Christian thing to do is to turn loose of all that junk and get yourself in a position where you can be a conveyor of God's mercy. Where you can be a presenter of love and forgiveness to a world around you. And as long as you're hanging on to stuff that you think you have a right to feel that way about, you'll never get there. If anybody had a right to say life didn't treat him very well, I'd say Joseph had a pretty good position to be in. But you know, in every situation and circumstance, given a little time and some patience and some faith, God turned that difficult situation into a better situation. And I remind you, you say, that's all Old Testament, that stuff doesn't happen anymore. I remind you that Paul wrote in the New Testament something that sounds like this in Romans chapter 8. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. Now, it doesn't say that Christian people are only going to get good stuff. It says that God works for the good of those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. Doesn't mean there's not going to be some bumps in the road. Doesn't mean there's not going to be some stuff, some junk that other people are going to put on us. Doesn't mean we won't even maybe make some bad choices of our own once in a while. But what it says is if we maintain our faith and our trust that God can take the bad and make good out of it. You believe that? Then we always have hope. And we have more than we need. Stand with me this morning. For several years, I officiated sports. And here's what I found out about perspective. I also had all four of my children involved in sports. And I've coached. And I've had certain opinions about men in black and white stripes when I was on the sidelines coaching. And when I was a parent in the stands, I had other opinions about men and women in black and white stripes when I was spectating. But I also blew the whistle a few times. And here's what I learned. Sometimes the best view is not on the floor in the midst of the action. As a person who had officiated ball games, sitting in the stands in an elevated position where you could kind of see the summarization of the whole thing, you saw things differently, and you could see things that you didn't see when you were standing here and all those sweaty bodies were doing this, you know. You missed things. You did the best you could. But your perspective was different. When you're sitting up, elevated, and you can see the whole thing, you see it differently. Isn't that interesting? Where does God observe from? And if we could see life through God's eyes, it would improve our perspective. Sometimes we're in the midst of it and we can't see the forest for the trees. And so when we view life right here. But God sees it in its totality. When will you get willing to quit looking at individual circumstances and begin to compile the picture and put the whole puzzle together? I have 26 years in the same church. A lot of stuff happens and my memory is not always the greatest, but I have in my office I have a puzzle picture of a tiger. It's a bust of a tiger, kind of shoulders up, that a little boy named David, I can't even remember his last name, but he used to come and sit on the front row until his family moved away or something. But he made this puzzle, and then he glued construction paper to the back of it so it would always stay together as one picture, and he gave me that picture. It's a beautiful picture. But you couldn't see it that way when it was all in pieces. And sometimes we're looking at the pieces when we need to let God help us see the big picture. Every head bowed and every eye closed this morning. I just wonder if there's anybody here who would say, Pastor, I've had one of those kind of years in recent days. I'm having one of those kind of years now. And to be quite honest, I don't really care for life some days. And I get frustrated and I get upset and I see things for what's happening at the moment instead of what's going to come out of it. And maybe there's somebody here today, maybe there's several somebody today that you just need a place to kind of lay life down in its totality again and say, you know, Lord, I gave my life to you, but I realize I've kind of picked it back up and I'm kind of trying to control parts of it. And maybe you just need to say, I need a fresh perspective. Anybody like that today? The altars are open. No music playing. We're not trying to coerce you with any special atmosphere. But how many of you would just maybe say, you know what? I just need to lay some things down. I need to turn loose of some things. I want to make sure that I don't develop the wrong attitude. I want to make sure that I don't start having tunnel vision. Indeed, I need to have a broader perspective. And I just need God to help me. We're not talking about people sinning necessarily. It could be that, but we're not talking about that. We're just saying, God, I need you to help my perspective. I need to get a fresh and a new perspective. I need to see things the way you see them. I need to treat people the way you want them to be treated instead of just operating out of my emotions a lot of times. Anybody like that? Anybody just say, you know what, I'm going through some stuff and I think it's gotten so heavy that I can't see past it. And I just need God to give me a broader view today. I just want to surrender it, yield it to Him. Anybody like that? Wants to pray. All right. You've been such a great listeners today, and I trust that the story of Joseph, that I know we just kind of took the whole thing and ran it in conglomeration today, but do you understand that God cares about you? and he wants to help you. No matter what you're going through, he's got a plan, and he'll see you through. You believe that? Amen. Brother Bruce Branstein, pray a closing prayer for us, please.